All right, I want to talk to you some more now. This morning of the 24th of October, 1955, on creative processes as they are used today at level 3 of the 6 levels of processing. Obviously, something is wrong if an individual has to have a great deal of mass. Obviously, something is wrong. In the first place, a thetan actually does not require mass. Now, what, first and foremost, is wrong? We discover the Frankenstein effect to be present to some degree, since the individual feels that he needs this mass from which he can take energy. He feels that he himself does not dare create energy. You follow me? So, not feeling that he can create energy, he feels he must have the energy then from an exterior source. The entirety of shame, blame, regret, guilt, inactivity, apathy, various suppressions, an unwillingness to coordinate or accomplish anything, to finish the cycle, do this, that, the other thing. All these things stem, really, from the computation, dare not create. And if an individual dare not create, then we can assume at once that the individual is facing the necessity of having energy masses from which he can draw energy to run his various machinery. You follow me? He dare not create. If he creates, he will accomplish the horrible thing of being the author of something which is undiscreatable. He cannot discreate it or uncreate it. He cannot then destroy it. Now, I use the word discreate, although it is not entirely proper, because the word destroy has too many connotations. The word destroy contains in it an enormous number of systems, so that if the cycle of action were to be stated, create, change, destroy, then it would seem that the cycle of action would contain a great many complexities. In other words, create would be very simple, and then destroy would be enormously complex. Do you see then that we wouldn't have really a single line of create, change, destroy? We would have a multiple line. The line would go from the single source, create, and would then branch out and become gradually thousands of other lines, so that we would have maybe billions of points at the point destroy, if we worked it the way it is normally worked in the physical universe. Destruction becomes a very complex thing. How do you go about destroying something? That's a terrifically interesting fact. How do you go about destroying a letter? Well, you get a match, and you take the letter, and you hold it in a place where it won't burn anything else, and where preferably you can't be seen, and you strike the match against the side of the box, and you hold the match underneath the corner of the letter, holding the letter in such a way that the finger won't be destroyed along with the letter, too. And then we let the letter burn, and the carbon-oxygen manifestation takes place, and the combustion then consumes the paper and the writing, and the ashes fall away, and we drop that final corner and let it burn up. Now, that's a simple destruction. You got it? That's a simple destruction compared to the destruction, let us say, involved in how do you raise a building. Well, you raise the building in a very simple way. You go and get somebody to raise it. But this somebody to raise it must have an exchange of money in which the materials he's going to salvage from the building must be counterbalanced with maybe additional payments, since it isn't entirely remunerative to do so. And then he has to go and get dynamite and bulldozers and shovels and picks and crews, all of which have to then have income certificates with the government, so that he can pay the government the amount of percentage that it requires in order to hire the person to shovel the stuff to put it in a truck. Oh, no. I mean, we just go out into such complexities on raising a building that we could sit here the rest of this week listing all of the facts and items of disposition. And the funny part of it is when we burned the letter, we still had ash and we still had smoke. And when we raised the building, we still had rubble. Now, maybe we can do something with that rubble, but we have done a lying thing. We have said, destroy. And we have meant, alter. You see that? So the word destroy, in common parlance, does not reach end of cycle. It is an unfinished cycle of action. It is create, change. That's all. We put the word destroy on there as a statement of a type of change. And that's all. It's a statement of change. It is not an end of cycle. Now, do you see how somebody could get trapped in this universe? And do you see how people could fail to show up for appointments? And do you see how people could go on waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting compulsively? Well, they've taken a, quote, physical universe, unquote, end of cycle. See, it's not an end of cycle at all. By the way, those quotes should be physical universe, end of cycle, unquote. It's not an end of cycle. No destruction has taken place. So the word destroy, in the way we use it, is not an end of cycle. It means that we have destroyed its activity, or its function, or its form. But we have not destroyed the memory of it. We have not destroyed the dust or the ashes or the smoke as a result thereof. We have not carted the bodies off the battlefield, although the army is destroyed. You see? There's always a residue, always a residue. So much so that the physical scientist, finally in apathy, has stated that there was such a thing as the conservation of energy. And he has hung himself with that stable datum. There are two stable data on which the physical science operates, neither of which is true. Conservation of energy is one of them, and the constancy of the speed of light is the other one. And he believes implicitly in these two things. And as long as he believes implicitly in these two things, a great oddity is going to occur. He will never get off to the stars. He has pinned himself with his system to the surface of Earth. He has several other laws which are not true, which have only relative truth. And one of these is Newton's law of interaction, that every action has an equal and contrary reaction. This only becomes a vague approximation of truth when we add what he understands to be in it. So long as you have actions and reactions of comparable magnitude. See, every action has an equal and contrary reaction of comparable magnitude if wavelengths and particles are of similar magnitude. The moment we unsettle this law and we take a small hammer and start to rap rhythmically inside a ship's hull, the ship starts going forward. Oh, no, you see, this is not possible. The laws of inertia and so forth. Actually, we've got a little hammer and we just go up to the bows of this ship, you see, or back to a bulkhead, and the ship is lying in the water. And we take this hammer, and at exactly the right rhythm, we go tap, 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 and the ship starts through the water. For every action, there's an equal and contrary reaction. Well, then why would the ship move? And yet this does observably move. You can build test models which will do this, which, with all the working parts and motive power contained in themselves, and Newton's law of reaction not revoked by Congress or anybody... Well, this model will nevertheless progress forward, although we've got just a tap, 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 tap going on inside the model against it itself. This is a fantastic thing, because of course it mustn't do that. The old comic strip, cartoon idea, the fellow sitting in the stern of the boat with a pair of blowers and blowing against the sails, you know? And the physicist is always saying, you know, this fool, I mean, you know, equal and contrary reaction. He read it, Newton said it, it must be true, but the funny part of it is I did it once and it works. If you blow at just exactly with a pair of blowers against a small boat's sails while you're sitting in the stern of this little boat, it will go forward. What is it? It's the inertia of the particles hitting the sail, that's all. It's as simple as this, but you have to do it in exactly the right rhythm, with exactly the right push, right force, in order to cause it to act. And if you did it with the wrong rhythm and the wrong force, your boat would just sit still. And that, by the way, is how flying saucers fly. Have an eccentric that flies round and round and round, and it is imparting an inertia to the hull. But the funny part of the flying saucer is, the odd part of it is, that it is not obeying Newton's law of interaction. You see, if every action had an equal and contrary reaction, the flying saucer would simply sit still. But this is not so. The moment we unbalance the law of inertia by really stating the law, comparable wavelength and rhythm, you see. We have to have comparable wavelength and rhythm in order to make Newton's law work. As soon as we come off of that and we get tinier rhythms or huger rhythms, we get an imbalance of the law itself. It's as simple as that, you see. In other words, the physical scientist has all these understandings, and he's trying to work in the physical universe with all these understandings. And these are just assumptions. They're assumptions. Correct and true within the province of his work only. They're not even true for thee and me in handling cars and grand pianos and so forth. The fact that a fire in a house threatens the grand piano, and that a couple of fellows, or even one, suddenly picks up the grand piano and moves it out in the street, which happens every now and then. Somebody says, how on earth did anybody ever get that grand piano out of the house? Look, there it sits, not broken up. It probably its legs won't go through the door or anything, you know? And there it sits, unscratched, and they get a hold of five men, and they laboriously, for the next 2 hours, move the grand piano back into the house, you see? We get these oddities, and the physical scientist looks at him and he says, we just throw that data aside because it's a wild variable, and we shouldn't have any business with these wild variables. Well, that's the only thing a scientist really should examine. Here's this system, and where are the wild variables? If he takes up and classifies and categorizes the wild variables, then he will find probably a new stability. And the new stability which we find by classifying some of these wild variables is that the physical science has yet to reach an end of cycle with anything. And so he is doomed to any action he undertakes to an eternity in that action. Get it? Get that nice and sharp now. Any action that the physical scientist undertakes dooms him to an eternity in that action, since it never completes. There's no end of cycle. So there is not a create, change, destroy, in the fullest sense of the word. By destroy, he means a disassembly of its parts, and in some fashion, a neglect of the disposition of the final part. He does not, when he raises a building, dispose of the dust, which rises because of the dynamite blast. He does not, when he burns a letter, or when you burn a letter, dispose of the smoke, but you might dispose of most of the ash. But you don't dispose of that little bit of ash that blew away and floated on down the street. You don't dispose of that ash. You see this? There's no end of cycle in the physical universe. It's horrible to conceive. Therefore, the duration of the physical universe is eternity. It has infinite duration, because it never ends itself. And people who protest against the physical universe are protesting against the Frankenstein monster effect, if they're protesting. It might be a very handy and a very good thing to have a playing field that never entirely unmocks. This might be a good thing, but it would be a bad thing to believe that it couldn't be unmocked, that it was an impossibility. At first, I imagine, we simply refrained from unmocking it. And then after a while, somebody got the idea that let's solve everybody's worry about this playing field. Solve everybody's worry about it. And let's say that it cannot be unmocked by inventing an agreement called the conservation of energy, that no energy is ever destroyed. And upon this reef is hung every case that is hung. It's hung right on that reef. It says, I must continue to have mass. I must continue to have massive terminals in order to have communication, for the excellent reason that communication will reduce my masses. And I must get these things from elsewhere, these masses, since I dare not myself create them. Because if I create them, I'll have another Frankenstein's monster. It'll just go on and on and on. It'll never finish and end a cycle. I cannot destroy the thing. One of the nastiest cases you ever want to confront is the case of a physical scientist. He's hung with a stable datum that energy is indestructible. And he sees energy in his bank and he says, therefore, it's indestructible. It cannot at any time disappear. Well, it's an interesting thing that you can not only make energy disappear, not only make it disappear in its parts and strew its parts around, you can also make the parts disappear if you want to. You can make the whole thing go in its entirety. All you have to do is start making perfect duplicates, and you'll get a disappearance. But where an individual is unwilling to have a disappearance of energy, follow this now, he's unwilling to have a disappearance of energy, which is to say, he is unwilling to create. You get the idea? He's unwilling to have a disappearance because he doesn't know where he's going to get another piece of energy. So he doesn't talk. So he can't engage in two-way communication. So therefore, unwanted masses stick around as well as wanted ones. You see? You follow me? You know how this works. He isn't going to create anymore. He knows he better not. He dare not create anymore. And if he dare not create anymore in himself, he doesn't dare talk. Because if he talks, he's going to miss some of his mass. He actually cannot go into communication unless he has an expendability of mass. And he won't have an expendability of mass as long as he believes that he dare not create any more mass. And of course, the scarcity of mass comes about because the individual believes, as he sits there, that all the mass he's going to get from somewhere else. And if he's going to get this mass from somewhere else, he'll have it. Now, of course, ownership processing gives us the clue as to one of the reasons he does this. The mass stays there if he misowns it. Then we get a continuance of mass, you see. He mocks it up and says, Joe did it. And he gets a continuance of mass. But there's no reason why he can't do this. He doesn't have to go on to the rest of the idiocies. You see? He doesn't have to go on to a total parasitic existence on masses that exist. He hasn't got to grab masses all over the place and stack them up one way or the other. He just dare not create. He dare not create because of the Frankenstein effect. Now, oddly enough, we have joined hands at this juncture with the physical sciences to such a degree that we can explain the existence of the physical sciences and why they are this way. We know the basic agreements on which they are made. The basic agreements are made this way. If we never finish an end of cycle, we will still have a playing field. See? But if we never finish an end of cycle, any of us, if we always come down to destroy, which means cut his head off or stab him, you know, that's not destroy in its final sense, we will wind up with tremendous quantities of residue. And we will eventually begin to object to this residue. And we will call them engrams, and we will call them masses and ridges. And we will call them screens and materials to obstruct one's sight. And we'll call them overweight. And we will call them all kinds of things, you see. And we will say, I don't want all this excess material. Then what am I going to do with it? Well, our answer is get another mock-up. Knock it off. See? Leave it there. Bury it in the ground. And go get another mock-up. See that? But the society doesn't permit you to kill this mock-up. So you find yourself killing one by inches and saying all the time, I didn't do it. Now, here's morality. Here's where morality, guilt, and such like join hands between thought and the physical universe. An individual has said, ow, 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 when you made a mock-up. And you have said, now I will uncreate the mock-up, which is making him say, ow, ow, ow. And you didn't do it. And the mock-up kept on going. Now, we could envision a neat number of tricks that could have been played on you, or you could have played on somebody to bring this about. See? The fellow mocked up a cat of huge proportions. And then the cat started swatting around somebody else's mock-ups, and somebody else said, ow, 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 ow. And the fellow said, well, all right, it's hurting somebody. I mean, it's really serious now. It's stopped being a game. Therefore, we will simply say, no cat. See? No cat. The cat went right on. And the fellow says, no cat. Cat, discreate. I created you. I can certainly discreate you. Cat goes right on knocking pot to mock-ups and getting bigger and fatter and so on. Well, you can imagine all kinds of tricks by which this could have been done. The fellow could have said, cat, all right, now cat attack mock-ups, you see. And at the moment he said, cat, you could have taken his cat and put your cat there. Get the idea? So quick that he wouldn't have noticed the reappearance of another cat. So now he says, my cat, unmock. And, of course, it won't unmock because it's your cat. Get the idea? Now, somebody could have done this with a picture. See, somebody could have said, say, that's certainly a beautiful picture you've got there, and it wasn't your picture. You swiped it. Beautiful picture you made there, and you say, oh, yes, that certainly is. I certainly did a good job on this picture. And you say, I never saw such a pretty picture. Now let's take a look at another one. And you then say, picture, move. Picture, move. You said, it's not going to move, it's not going to obey me, therefore I will destroy it. And you said, my picture, unmock. And it stayed right there and got heavier. Why? It wasn't your picture. But because you didn't want to be so, you know, his admiration was fine, and you wanted to be in communication, you see. You didn't want to say, he just said, that's a beautiful picture you made, and you say, I certainly did make a beautiful picture there, and now he wants to see another picture, so we're going to move this picture. And you didn't say, Joe's picture, disappear. Would have disappeared, see. Instead of that, you keep up the pretense that it was your picture, and then try to handle it. You've miscalled the ownership. In other words, there are numerous ways and numerous tricks, tremendous numbers of combinations, by which you could have gotten in to a non-end of cycle on something. So you finally took this picture and you went crunch, crunch, crunch. See? You say, well, I have some use for this. I've got some use for this. I've shown it that I can change it. So if I can change it, I can change its position. So therefore, I will now take and shift its position. I'll put it over here and pretend I have some use for that little ball of energy. Get the idea? So a person starts to get these little balls of energy around one way or the other. And first he kind of sticks them in his pockets and he puts them over in some other universe and does this with them and that one. All of them based on a lie, one kind or another. Basic lie is ownership and authorship. And, see, and he gets more and more of these things. And one day, he makes a black picture, and he says, this will really discombobulate these boys, you know. So here's a bunch of guys standing there, and all of a sudden he makes up this black picture, and it starts down on them. They've all agreed to see each other's pictures, you see. Solid agreement. And the thing comes down on him, and he says, good heavens, look at that horrible black thing coming down on all of us. And the other fellows say, gee, I wonder where that came from. He says, I don't know. Wonder who made an awful thing like that, a couple of them said. Oh, if a fella do this, it'd be pretty bad, this guy says. I don't know. Maybe Jinx did it. Maybe he did it. The only one that gets blacked by the picture is the guy who made it, said somebody else then. Get the idea? The rest of them don't know who made it. They say it's other ownership, and just that statement all by itself will relieve them of responsibility for the picture. But supposing they had all made it, and they said, well, somebody else made this picture, they'd all get it. See this? Now, you're running a pre-clear one day, and you go down through the bank, and all of a sudden, everything turns black.
Brrr.
You say, well, all right, let's just handle this. You said just handle this, huh? Well, this was a bad thing to do to somebody at one time or another. It was a very bad thing to do to somebody on the whole track. Somewhere back when. And the fellow says, well, all right, I'll handle this. Unmock. He's already been through this once. Long time ago, he said to this mass, unmock. And then he had it at that time put over here in a corner where nobody'd notice, you see. And it doesn't unmock. It does not disappear. You see this? There it is. And he said, good heavens. What do I do? Now, we run some ownership processing on this, and some interesting things happen. We find out all kinds of things. It was possibly the body's blackness that it mocked up. It was possibly the Thetan's blackness. But most often, you'll find out it's created by the individual himself. And thins out and goes away when he owns it thoroughly enough, run thoroughly by an auditor. Or it goes away by two-way communication, which again disposes of it. You follow me? Now, that isn't necessarily all the ways there are. If blackness is this hard to get rid of, and if one gets into this much trouble by creating blackness, then please, please look this over. An individual, after a while, is going to stop creating it. And when he stops creating it, he says, I have no further control over it. Control comes in when communication goes out. And belongs in class two. Controlling of things belongs in class two. When you're actively controlling them. Now that sounds very strange, but it does. You have to address the postulate to it as part of communication in order to get the thing to control. And supposing the basis of this thing was no communication, therefore it would become uncontrollable. You'll find this time after time when you cut a person down on communication terminals and he dare not create. This proviso, you see, goes along with all of these difficulties with masses and spaces. The proviso is he dare not create. Then he will do this oddity. He will do this oddity. He will flick out of two-way communication into an effort to control. See this? He'll hit that borderline. He'll cross it. And after that, he gets control happy. He's control happy because he's out of communication. You see this? Now, he's still fixated on the idea of trying to make a postulate work, but he's doing it by communication in some fashion or another. Now, actually, you don't have to address a postulate or consideration to anything to have the postulate become effective on it. You don't have to address it to anything. So, therefore, making considerations is not necessarily a communication process. But controlling things certainly is. You have to communicate with things that you wish to control, as we understand control, you see. Again, this is the way we use the word control. We move things around. We station them, you see. We regulate their shape and size. We change them in one fashion or another. Or we create them, but if we can't uncreate, we don't create. Follow me? If you want to see a Preclear's bank stand still, just stand still. Just have him start mocking up mock-ups that can create. Bank stands still. It's quite amusing. Time hangs in suspense. An odd phenomenon. We have him mock up mock-ups that can create. You got the idea? We have him make bodies that can make things. And you will see at once, at least to some slight degree, time stands still for him. Why? He creates things then that can create. And time stands still. He just slams into the second postulate, that's all. But he must not create. And if you mustn't create, you don't have any time either. The time you have depends to whatever degree on the time you create. So therefore, a fellow who is stuck on the track has stopped creating. To some degree, time must be in your hands or you won't have any. This, by the way, is an observable phenomenon. It's quite cute as a phenomenon. Fellow feels sort of you know, frozen in space, stopped. All you did was ask him to create something that can create. You don't ask him to create something, or you won't get the phenomenon, because usually the individual this is most pronounced on cannot or will not create anything. But he will create things that can create by putting it a second stage, because then he can blame it all on that. See? So you can make the little subjective test in this life. Time depends on creativeness. Mass depends on creativeness. Accumulated mass depends on creativeness. Space depends on creativeness. So therefore, lookingness depends upon creativeness too. And where an individual is preserving mass, two conditions must ensue. He either must have it in order to continue his communications, since from somewhere he must get some energy, or it was created as something he did not want, and he doesn't want it now. You get the idea? So he resists it and holds it in place. One of the more fabulous manifestations of all of this is, however, the fact that he has simply made up his mind not to create. Just as in class two, he makes up his mind not to communicate. Just as in class three, he makes up his mind never to make a first and second postulate set up again. He says, I will never lie again. I will only tell the truth. Oh. I mean, this is nonsense. You can sit down and make a pretty clear lie to you. Say, tell me a lie. And a case that's having an awful hard time won't go into creativeness to that degree. A lie to him is pretty bad. You say, tell me something that isn't true. And he'll stagger and gag and fumble and so forth. You start to process somebody you can't create, and he starts to drain the physical universe of its various manifestations for his answers. See why he does this? A fellow drains the bank. He doesn't create a new truth. Not because he cannot create. See, that is the oddity that has been a stable datum with us for some time, and I'm stressing it now. It is an oddity. It's been a stable datum with us. We've said he cannot do mock-ups. He cannot create. Now, you know this has been around. This is a non-factual statement. Got it? The problem doesn't crack with this non-factual statement because you start doing mock-ups with him from, for one thing, the stable datum that he cannot create, and you are going to make him able to create, and you have not sufficiently agreed with the situation as is it. And you have, if anything, then confirmed his inability to make mock-ups. By throwing another datum in the line, you see. The correct one is he dare not. And the actually factual dead center correctness is he has not dared before to make mock-ups for reasons best known to himself. Frankenstein monster effect. He made something he didn't like. He brought about something he couldn't tolerate. Too many people said, ow, ow, ow. Too many things happened. Too much destruction ensued. And now the thing which is destroying cannot itself be destroyed. It is over close to end of cycle, since it itself is bringing about end of cycle, but it cannot finish the end of cycle. In one way, this is workable, because it makes a very solid playing field after a while. In the other way, it's unworkable because it leaves one's bank very badly cluttered up. Now, the totality of the inflow mechanism, whereby we have the pre-clear sitting here with everything in the world flying in on him, is this desperate feeling that he must get the energy from somewhere else, and tells us at once if he must get the energy from somewhere else, then he himself dare not create again. See? So if we look at somebody who's getting the bank coming in on him, crash, then we have somebody who dare not create. What are the remedies for these? Well, the lowest echelon remedy would be creative processing. We just have the fellow go on creating and 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 making mock-ups, making mock-ups, making mock-ups, making mock-ups, making mock-ups, making mock-ups, making mock-ups. You get the idea? And he'd eventually slide out of this when he found none of them bit. But every once in a while, he'd find that he couldn't control one or something. And you'd say that. So, okay, we could handle this as an automaticity, but today we don't. We say, okay, okay, pre-clear, make another one. And that would go all out of control. And you'd say, that's all right. So what? So it went all out of control. We're not controlling things, we're creating them. Oh, he'd say. I get it. Okay. So he makes these mock-ups, and they get steady. You just get him to change his mind. See? You shift from creation over to change and control rather easily because you go into the second postulate. You start creating, you skid into the second postulate. Second postulate with him is liable to be can't control it. It's liable to be something. I've created it. Now I want to uncreate it. And it doesn't uncreate it. It goes out of control. I've created it. Now I have no responsibility for it. It goes out of control. You follow me? So, wherever we look, we discover that the individual difficulty is an individuality on the subject of creativeness. Sounds very strange, but it's true. Terminal trouble. Got that? California, they have termite trouble. And other places, they have other kinds of troubles. But your preclear has terminal trouble. In order to talk, he must be known as to location. In order to be known as to location and to get paid, to draw his paycheck, called communication, he has to have a known terminal. If he can't create one, he's got to steal one. If he steals one, he then says it is his, it will get more and more solid, and it has to have energy on which to run. In order to get energy on which to run, he's got to take energy from elsewhere and bank it up, as far as he's concerned. Because he cannot get enough energy from elsewhere, one way or the other, he has a tendency to get smaller and run less active mock-ups. Because it's hard to get all this energy stacked in, and because it's very expensive, he then forbears communicating because he has is the energy which he already has. You get the idea? So he tries to get people, for instance, to talk to him without talking to them. Or he gets on a compulsive outflow of trying to make people answer and acknowledge to him by setting an example and just shoots the wad. You see, he just blows this. Then he doesn't create any more in its place. Now, the remedy of havingness is quite a workable process. Remedy of havingness means to pull in and throw away havingness until the individual has overcome his terminal trouble. See, that's remedy of havingness. You'll find out after a while the individual starts to get along without havingness. But we've actually departed rather widely from the fact when we say remedy of havingness. And although we still remedy havingness and always still do these things just the same and on route one as we ever did. We don't change that at all. We do change it at level three. We know that he has terminal trouble and that he has power trouble. See, he's got trouble with the amount of juice he needs to run the bank. And believe me, the bank requires juice to run. That's why people have to go to sleep every night. They lie there and hope their batteries charge up, or they will accidentally, fortunately, without any responsibility of their own, dream something. See, they might dream something, and that'll add to the bank in some serious way. You get the idea? They just hope this will occur, and they're sort of negative about the whole thing. Now, an individual has to be able to create knowingly and know that creation is not necessarily a tremendous liability. Before he contemplates destroying anything in the fullest sense of the word. In other words, we can't go over into class one of making things on postulates and unmaking them on postulates until the individual's energy hunger has been assuaged to some degree, which, mind you, is basically terminal hunger. He merely wants the energy to run the terminal. He has to have the terminal, he feels. Got it? Now, he could be talked out of needing a terminal at all, and by postulate making his location known. And that is an ideal state and one which can be achieved. And when a person can achieve this very easily, he exteriorizes very easily. And if he can't achieve this very easily, he doesn't exteriorize very easily, and that's the long and short of it. An individual's not going to go away from mock-ups which are serving as terminals. He's not going to depart from a comm terminal unless he has some idea he can still communicate with it. It's as simple as that. Or, unless he can communicate from exactly where he is. Now, you can't make an operating thetan who will abandon terminals until he's fairly sure he, as a terminal, can make other people cognite that he's there. See? Get the idea? So here are two states. One, simple Thetan exterior. This occurs when the individual is sure that he can still use the mock-up as a communication terminal. An operating Thetan would occur when the individual was very secure in the idea that he himself could be a terminal from where he was, make people aware of his presence as a terminal without using very much energy, or by simply creating energy wherever he was and uncreating it again. You follow me now? Now, these are definitions for these two states, which are very, very workable definitions. They are action definitions. And by defining them, we know how to remedy them. Person won't exteriorize. Okay? The individual's having terminal scarcity. He's having terminal trouble. Now, let's get worse than that. The individual kind of foggily goes in and out of the terminal and around, he's yo-yoing around. He seems to be down below a good, stable, walking terminal, you see. And he has huge masses of energy which fly by and hit him in the face and swirl around his head and do all that sort of thing. That individual isn't having just terminal trouble. He is having power trouble trying to empower the terminal. See? We've now removed it one further step. Got it? So you could have power trouble, and by this we don't mean megalomania. We mean juice. This then would have some basis there on the terminal. So we might have to remedy this thing called power trouble, juice trouble, electrical trouble, before we could remedy terminal trouble. It's where is his attention fixed, you see? And if he's got electricity trouble, why, we start merely addressing the problem of terminals as terminal trouble itself, then we're liable to be not hitting one face low enough. Well, what we do is say to this fellow, all right, we say to this fellow, now get these manifestations. We say to this fellow, all right, now mock up a communication terminal. The fellow says, nothing happens. You say, what are you looking at? And he'll say, nothing. And you'll say, well, now, come on, what are you looking at? And he'll say, nothing, nothing, I'm not seeing a thing. And you say, what are you looking at? This is very standard. I mean, I feel like kicking a preacher after a while. I say, what are you looking at? Come on, will you please close your eyes and take a look at what you're looking at? And he'll finally say, oh, I'm not looking at anything but all these rockets going by, just like all this. And you say, well, are you looking at that? And he'll say, yes, I'm looking at that. Well, now, why doesn't he want to look at something? He's afraid he's going to, as is, some ergs of power, see? He's afraid he's going to waste some power one way or the other. His electrical bill, he feels, would get much too high, which is to say, no terminal. That's how high your electrical bill could get, you see? You could starve to death on an electrical level. All right. You understand that the bank itself is an electrical phenomenon, that the terminal itself is made out of electrically compacted masses, and that all of the conduits, lines, and reactions are electrically served, and that the body itself is really, for its form and shape, an electrical anchor point system. Now, we don't have to give a darn about how this system is put together. It is utterly meaningless. We don't care one way or the other about it. We very often find that we try to adjust somebody's anchor points with the greatest of skill, and he's just as sick as before. What was the matter with this fellow? It was anchor points were sucking in and going out and going this way and going that way, and they were doing things. You got it? These anchor points were doing things. The trouble with that individual was really not a misplacement of anchor points. The trouble with the individual's remedy of having this. Now, when I get people to snap anchor points into place, I always remedy their havingness of those particular anchor points. And I get the currents going fast enough and furious enough so that the displacement phenomena, the thing is kicking the anchor point out of the line and so on, will itself be remedied. See? I get the current, see, that is pulling the anchor point out of the line cared for, and then having put the anchor point in place. Don't having put a substitute point there, having put the original point in. Quite important. All right. So we have power trouble or electrical trouble as being junior to terminal trouble. See? The anchor points are not going to stay there. He's not going to be able to mock up a terminal which will stay there at all unless we remedy this business about juice, electricity. And it's just electricity, that's all. Of course, it could be the electricity in the space in which it exists. But he tends to get smaller spaces to cut down the amount of interchange amongst terminals. And he feels if he could get his space down to zero, he'd be all set. There wouldn't be any place there for juice to flow, and he would have saved it all. So there's the diminishing space phenomenon you see with an individual. You get increasing mass and diminishing space as you get power trouble. An individual who's up against this, then, is having power trouble, not just terminal trouble. So therefore, we get him to make a mock-up. And what does he do, this fellow? He says, it's just these rockets going back and forth. It's just these energy masses which are swirling around my head. You understand that? You tell him to put up a communication terminal, and the fellow puts up mush. Now, you can tell him to put up an unknown mass. You can tell him to put up a confusion. You can tell him to mock up various things, and he very well will mock up something. He'll mock up an invisible terminal. He's liable to do a lot of things. But the point is these things are mushy, and these things are hard to recognize as communication terminals because they're not. They're juice sources. So if you were to tell this fellow, now let's mock up some juice. He'll say, some what? You say some electricity. Let's mock up something about electricity. Let's mock up something. Yeah. What you got? He says, a power line. Well, he didn't mock it up, you see. He mocked up a power line he's seen. Do you know that it may be the first facsimile he's ever gotten? The first thing he has ever seen besides these rockets going back and forth? You say, all right, mock up some electrical sources. Mock up some juice. Mock up some electricity. Golly, he's liable to mock up the doggonest things you ever saw. See? He always can mock up what he can mock up. Got the idea? He can always mock up what he can mock up. So you find out what he can mock up, and you have him mock that up until he then can mock up something else. And we start in on the gradient scale of terminals, which electronically, as far as he's concerned, is to mock up power sources, to mock up terminals, and then to remedy the existence of terminals to a point where he himself can create one at will or uncreate one at will. And then his postulates and considerations will work. They won't work until then. And you don't have him uncreate anything. This sounds fantastic. You just don't have him uncreate things. You just have him keep on mocking things up. And he will know this is wrong. And each time he mocks something up, he tries to push it through the whole cycle. And when he gets to the point where he creates it and then it changes suddenly, he's just hit the middle of the cycle. But control is start, change, and stop. Or create, change, destroy. That is how you define control, see? You can control anything that you can create, change, and destroy. Now, when he's mocked something up and it goes automatically, what's happened? He's simply stuck on the middle of the curve, and he knows he can't uncreate it. See, you're running up against that. So the thing goes on automatic and begins to fly around, see? That's all there is to that. So it went on automatic. So what? You're not processing in the area of control. Okay? It'll age. Very often he'll mock them up and he'll unmock. Mocks them up and he unmock. He mocks them up. That's fine with him, see? You don't really realize, but that's fine as far as he's concerned. Mock them up and he unmock. Mock them up and he unmock. And all of a sudden he'll be doing this. Mock them up and he unmock. And then he'll try to mock it up again, see? It's not there. It won't mock up again. What's he been using for a mock-up? Who cares? Getting him to mock up something. You got it? So you're operating in power, juice, sources, and supplies, or you're operating in terminals, or you're operating on the operating Thetan level, and the total thing is his concentration and difficulties with energy are so great, referring as they do to the everyday world in which he is living, that he won't change his mind about him unless he's changed his mind about him. He won't change his mind about the everyday world in which he's living because he is being fairly successful. He is presenting a mock-up. It is functioning one way or the other. He can talk to his fellows so he can collect his pay. You've got to improve his ability to have terminals before you can improve his pay. That's something that somebody in businesses ought to learn. He will ask for more pay and then protest against having it. He will ask for more communication and then protest because you gave it to him. Why does he do this? Because he wants more pay, but the second he starts to receive it, communication, he starts to as is, so he stops it. You could probably unmark a whole staff by overpaying them. It's a fact of the matter is. Instead of that, you've got to give them more terminal or better terminal. And then you can pay them what you like. You get the idea? There's got to be more to work for or at and talk about, you know, work for and at before you can throw them up along the line. They just sort of unmock if you give them too much pay flow. This is an oddity. This is not why the Hazi does this, because the Hazi is 90% of the time broke. But here we have a great oddity. Here we have a great oddity. We have the basic consideration of the individual centering upon gathering pay. He is saving terminals so that he might someday be paid. You get it? He's controlling terminals so that he might someday be paid. What is his pay? His pay is communication. If he doesn't want communication, it's because he can't afford it. He really does want it. He won't indulge in it. You give him communication that seems important enough, and he will receive it. Now, the individual who saves himself for the emergency, see? He doesn't do much talking or living until all of a sudden the emergency comes along, and then he shoots the works. Well, he can do it in that instance, you see? Individuals then don't do much talking unless there's some big action taking place or something like that. Big emergency comes up. Do you know the type of individual I mean? Almost all these individuals will stop talking if the emergency gets high enough. The thing you must not do as an auditor is create the emergency with auditing blunders. You got it? You mustn't create an artificial emergency. You're trying to get a preclear who can afford to pay and be paid in communication. That's what you want. You're not just forcing him to communicate. You get the idea? In other words, you're putting him in position where he can pay and be paid with communication. You got it? Now, there's certain difficulties that abuse him with the idea that he has to be very, very careful about his communication. And this in itself is false. So that we take two-way communication and we talk with him about it and about this and about that. And we as-is several things. Remember, two-way communication as-is. And if we've got somebody on a terrific mass starvation and we talk to him very much on a casual basis, we find him getting sullen. And if the person is crazy and we acknowledge everything the person is saying, the person will probably spin. You got that? You got that real good? Huh? Because if you start processing somebody, indulging in too much communication with this person, when this person cannot even vaguely afford the expenditure of any juice, much less terminal, the person's terminal starts to go to pieces. In other words, the juice supply is so small, the terminal starts to go to pieces and they'll spin to save themselves from further communication. You then will stop talking to them, at least. You get the idea? You get all sorts of wild conditions with regard to this. Running 8C with no acknowledgement at all might be superior to an insane person. That's something you will have to judge. It's all very well to teach you a mechanical process and say so and so and so and so. Now, actually, running an insane person on 8C is not very dangerous because they're making up their havingness as fast as they're losing it by your acknowledgement. But they won't communicate with you while they're running 8C. They usually run 8C dead silent. And every time you acknowledge them, you're cutting their havingness down. Now, they might win if you just sat there and gave them nothing but the command and no acknowledgement. They might win to that degree. Well, now, I'd hate to cut you loose with this without an understanding of it. But there are times to acknowledge and times not to. And the person you don't acknowledge is a person who's on the verge of the spin because of loss of energy, power, terminal. You get the idea? You know, you can talk to some little kid that's crying and he doesn't talk back. Why? He thinks he's lost the terminal. Why doesn't he talk back? He kind of thinks he's awful low on terminals, see? So therefore, loss brings him into tears, you see? All right, he thinks he's low on terminal, and the terminal is dropped off, and now if he starts talking to, he will just as is more mass. And so he's really liable to go by the boards with the body he's got left. So he doesn't want to talk to you. He's liable to do anything to prevent himself from talking to you. Well, now, what can you do? What can you do with him? Let him cry. That's what you're going to do with him. Don't try to cheer him up. Let him cry. Let him cry. Until he finally conceives that you're there. Now, you start to talk to a kid that's crying, you'll very often throw him into a tantrum, or he'll get upset, or he'll fling himself around, he'll do various things. He wants you to stop talking to him. He has lost a terminal. He's lost something. There's something gone there, one way or the other. And now you, with your two-way communication, you dog, are trying to collect some pay. You want him to say something. He knows better than to say something because he's just going to lose more, isn't he? And you enforce communication on him, and he's liable to spin. But if you use communication to make him aware of the fact that he's not entirely out of terminals, get the nicety of this balance. You're there. You're talking at him. You don't really expect him to answer. Get the idea? All of a sudden, he'll stop crying, relax. Because he's recognized you're there. You've done this very gently. You haven't said very much. He has simply become aware of you. Or you put another terminal into his hand, you see? You could take a little toy or something, sort of, you put it in his hand. He'll reject it at first. Why is he rejecting it? It's not there, that's all. He's afraid you're going to talk to him. All of a sudden, he'll take it and he'll say, oh, well, this is fine. Give him almost anything. Now, the funny part of it is he's liable to then tear it up. Or do something like this. Well, why does he tear it up? Energy. He's run down. His batteries are down. It's the wildest set of agreements you ever heard of. You might give him a piece of paper. And they start tearing it up, ripping it all to pieces, doing things with it and so forth. Here you've gotten into the juice mechanism as you watch them destroy it. And as you watch this, you will understand it. It goes on the very simple rules of an individual can be, you might say, juice scarce, or terminal scarce, or postulate scarce. Three conditions. Juice scarce, terminal scarce, postulate scarce. Now, he can't make postulates. He might make something, you see, and he might make people aware of him, and they might become aware of this, and then he'd as is, and he has a lot of daffy considerations. They all depend on this. The remedy of it is simply to make him remedy his ability to make terminals, and you don't care what happens to them. He will eventually be able to mock up a juice mass or source or a terminal or make a postulate to make people aware of his there-ness. And he'll go up on a gradient scale of this to the degree that you successfully let him mock up what you told him to mock up each time you told him. Remember, he can mock up unknownnesses. He can mock up confusions. He can mock up invisibilities. He can mock up blacknesses. He can mock up illnesses. He can mock up anything you want him to mock up, you understand? As long as it'll stand for, at the lowest level, a juice source, and at a little higher level, a terminal. And finally, he will simply be making postulates. And then and there, he will be able to destroy by postulate. He will say, not there, and it's not there. Got the idea? We've gotten him over the Frankenstein monster effect. And this is the mission of creative processing today. Thank you.